Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Another beautiful fall, or is it winter now? I guess it's winter. So welcome. This is the December show. I'd like to say it's the last one of the year, but it's not, because we're going to take next week off. No show on, of course, Christmas Eve Day. But on New Year's Eve Day, the 31st, I think we're going to have a show. And it's going to be all about New Year's resolutions and checklists and items and things to complete, goals to set in January that I think from a tax and legal standpoint can help you immensely. So we're going to be doing that on December 31st. I want to say January again, December 31st. But this is the last show before the big holidays hit. And welcome. And if you haven't been with us before, my name is Mark Kohler, a CPA, attorney, author, family man, scoutmaster, and part-time surfer, pro circuit. No, of course not. I'm not that good. But I love to have fun and keep it real, which some of you may find a little unique with your CPA. There's a lot of great, creative, exciting CPA types out there, but they're hard to find. No offense, my fellow CPA industry. But anyway, today is all about taxes and CPA planning. It's the year-end tax planning final checklist open forum show. Woo! Is that a mouthful? Well, that's what we're doing today. I've got a whole list of email questions that have come in from you, my wonderful listeners from around the country. And it's going to be a busy hour. In fact, I've already told my regular tipster guests that come on the show that I don't need them today, don't want them, or else we're not going to get through this list. So this is an exciting hour where I can field your questions and hit some tax planning strategies that can really, really save you a lot of heartache, time, and money. So I'm really excited about that. Now, I want to also bring up a few housekeeping items that can be a big benefit for you as we move into the year end. First, gosh, I don't even know where to start. We're going to hit another issue, and boy, I'm getting kind of a little weird beep that's not typical, so I'm a little concerned about that. Justin, if you want to join me here, I want to make sure everybody can hear me. Justin, can you hear me live on there? Everything sound good?
I can.
Okay. Justin is in the studio covering for Lisa today, so I think we're okay, and I'm going to put it out there on the chat line. We've got a number of people on the chat line. Neil, comments. Mark, I can hear you. All right, we're good. I just kind of have this weird little beep here in the studio on my ear set and want to make sure we're okay. Okay, so moving along here, what I wanted to hit with some of the housekeeping items. One of the first ones is the deadlines, December 31st deadlines. Now, these are in the newsletter. We're going to talk about these a little bit, the 401k, paying your kids, those items. We'll hit those, and you can review those in the newsletter. But a couple other ones that I think are fun, and the message I shared today in the newsletter was how to make sure your holidays are a tax write-off. So if you haven't read through that little article, if you will, on the newsletter, it's kind of fun. I thought it was pretty funny. I tried to be creative there. But I talk about when you're at the holidays with family, trying to meet with a vendor, trying to meet with a customer, doing your corporate family annual meeting, maybe visiting a rental property. And I joke about through the article, ways to avoid your family during the holidays. See, this is really a two-pronged approach. How to get a tax write-off and avoid your family during the holidays. Isn't that a win-win? Well, for some of you, I know that is not nice. You love to be around your family and the in-laws, and I've got wonderful in-laws, of course. They're listening to the show, so I have to be careful. But for some of you that are don't enjoy being around the family and the in-laws, why not get a tax write-off in the process by integrating a little business into your holiday travel? So check out that article. It was funny. I already had one of my clients send me an email, Scott, that said, hey, Mark, I'll meet you at a sports bar and watch a football game, and let's talk business. And then, boom, I got a write-off for that little trip. So he's already thrown out the idea. So keep that in mind. Now, a couple other points. In January, you'll see this in the newsletter. For those that are in the area and want to make the trip, you jump on a Southwest flight. It is an incredible conference, and it's free. It's sponsored by UPS. It's the Entrepreneur Growth Conference. It's the sixth annual, and every year it's in a different part of the country. It's been in Florida, it's been in California, in Texas, and now this year it's in New Orleans, and that's in January. I think it's January 22nd. I'm going to just throw that out there, kind of the second or third week of January. On the newsletter, you can see the link directly to this registration page, or you can go to entrepreneur.com. Please check it out. It's once you register, and it does fill up, and then there's no more registration, that's all you have to do. It's free. They provide lunch. There's three breakout sessions and a keynote speaker, lots of giveaways, and it's the annual conference for Entrepreneur Magazine. It's just phenomenal, and one of the amazing panelists that will be there is yours truly. So that's why I'm pimping it out. I have a great time at this conference, and I sit back, and I've already even scheduled my other breakout session where I'm going, and it's going to be awesome. So I'll talk about that more over the next couple weeks. But right now is a great time to go book a little Southwest flight, go out there for the day. It starts about 8 in the morning, goes till about 5 in the evening. If you can do it where you fly in the night before and get a cheap hotels.com and just come visit the conference, again, there's no cost. It's going to be a lot of fun, and that's in New Orleans in mid-January. So check that out. A couple other quick announcements is I've got some videos there in the newsletter today. There are also one of them is on my YouTube channel. The first fun one, I'll mention the fun one, is we just finished up the sixth annual tax and legal wealth transformation workshop series. I'm trying to make sure I say all the right words here. I just finished it up in Honolulu last Saturday. It was an awesome workshop, and I love my clients over in Hawaii, and we recorded it in HD when I did it in Orange County. And for those of you that missed the workshop, you can get the workshop for $79 and watch it at your leisure. It's an excellent recording. And so if you haven't done that yet, please do. And you can get to it at markjkohler.com. Just go to the website there. I've also sent out a couple emails. You'll see in the newsletter and maybe a little drip of an email here in the next few days. But check that out. And here's the point. When I was in Hawaii last weekend, I shot a North Shore surf video. So it's pretty cool. I thought you guys might like it. It's got some pumping music, and it's on YouTube now. And if you want to go share it on your social network and say, hey, here's my dorky CPA, this guy can actually surf, it's pretty fun. So go check that out. It's in the newsletter, and it's on my YouTube channel. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel if you wouldn't mind. It would really help me spread the good word and share that little that video if you'd like. It's kind of fun. Now, the other video that's there, and I'm going to jump into our questions here in two more minutes, if not sooner, but I just wanted to mention this as well, is I was able to shoot a GM car commercial video for the web. It hasn't played on network TV, maybe someday, but I was able to shoot this little GM video on the truck deduction, the 179 auto deduction that is going to be severely limited come December 31st. So if you're in the market for an SUV or a truck, I shoot about a minute and 30 second GM commercial video, and I put a couple links on the newsletter for that. It's on entrepreneur.com, and also on the YouTube channel for entrepreneurs. So check that out, and I think you'll find that really, really helpful. So now let's see here. I'm kind of a little nervous here. I inserted all of my questions for the radio show, and now they're not showing up here. So I'm going to have to go through my mail here as we tackle these one at a time. So that's okay. We'll do it. I don't know what happened there. That's interesting. It was just fine just a moment ago. So let's see here. Okay, so let's dive into this first one. This is from Karen. So here we go. We're going to just dive into some year-end tax planning tips. I've got a blog article on 10 year-end tips that came out a week and a half ago. That may spur some of the questions some of you have. I'll list some of these as we go through the show today. But for the most part, this is taking open callers, and if you have a question and you want to ask it live on the air, you get priority. If some of you are nervous that I've missed your email or your question, please call in and just press the number 1. Mute the sound on your computer if you're listening on your computer. But Justin in the studio will pick up your call and bring you out here live, and your question would get priority if you want to ask a live question. Okay, so here we're going to just, I'm just going to jump into these questions. I hope I don't miss anyone. I probably have more questions than I have time for, so we'll just do the best we can. Okay, this is from Karen. She says, thank you for your radio show, Mark. It's one of my favorites, and I listen to it, because it has some legal and tax education I can't get anywhere else. Thank you so much. And she says, I came across this point, and I'm concerned. She says, can I convert my California Corp to a non-registered GP, or general partnership? And she says, what is a non-registered general partnership? Now, this is not just a California issue, so let me mention this to everybody. She says, does it mean no tax return if I convert to this entity? And I know what Karen's thinking in California is that if I convert from a corporation to a general partnership, is that going to save me on the $800 minimum tax? Well, absolutely, it will save on that tax, but is it a good thing to do? And, of course, that's the question. And so what I'd like to do is, this is a big question, so let me just highlight a couple points that might help in this process. And the reality is many of you out there could operate as a general partnership. And when you operate as a general partnership, then you're good to go without having to register at the state level. It's a non-registered general partnership, and any of you could do that in any state. But you have liability individually and with any of your partners. You get no protection at all. So, Karen, my concern there is that by having a non-registered general partnership, you've got liability exposure. Now, you get around that extra tax in California, but you still have to file a tax return, and you don't have any protection. So, folks, where I find the general partnership to be a good fit, and that's when I have two clients, one of each has their own S corporation. So if you wanted to do a business deal with me, Karen, I might take my S corporation and make it a partner with your S corporation in a non-registered general partnership. And in California, that could save me the cost of having this extra, I guess, S corp, and that could be a really good fit. So some of you may want to consider the general partnership as a way to get around that issue. So think about it, and that's where we would use that. So now I'm going to jump over some another question now. And some of you that have asked quite in-depth questions, please be patient because I might cut it a little short and be a little more cautious and careful for those other listeners, just so that we don't get too in-depth on a topic that no one else is going to really care about. So, but let's jump into this. Some of the questions here, folks, that are a little outside of the tax realm, a couple of tough ones that came over. And Gerald, I got your question here on foreclosures and short sales. I've actually sent that question over to Lee Chen, and I've asked him to comment on that, and I'll email it over to you. Maybe I'll comment for the next radio show for everyone's benefit. But his question is about the retroactive exemption for recognition of income on foreclosures for short sales on a personal residence. I'm not sure where we're at on that, so Jared, we'll send you a specific email. So folks, if I can't answer your question, I will get you the answer. But I'm going to have to pass on that one. Now, the so next question. We've got Sergeant here, and he says, Mark, he says, my question is having a W-2 income for both husband and wife. How can we save more taxes, and what should we focus on for next year's tax planning? Well, this is so I'm going to repeat that. And this is a very important one for many of you that are listening, and it's a tough one. He says, Mark, I've just got a W-2, husband and wife, both of us have day jobs. How can we save more in taxes? Well, I give a whole workshop on that, Sergeant. It's like 6 hours of content. And so I don't know if that's a really appropriate question for the radio show, but let me make a couple points that I think are good for everybody. The first thing is, if you have that day job and you're trying to save taxes, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle. Your itemized deductions are going to be the best bet, and those can oftentimes be limited. And when I say itemized deductions, I'm talking about giving money to charity, writing off your home mortgage interest, maybe some property or sales taxes or something based on your jurisdiction, maybe some unreimbursed employee expenses or some investment expenses. But really, you're in that bracket where you're just going to get hosed based on the amount of income you're making. And brackets, tax brackets have gone up. You've got Obamacare taxes that could hit you. It's brutal. So I would make to this point for everybody out there listening, if you and your spouse have a W-2, it is absolutely critical that you start looking at a small business on the side or real estate investment, maybe doing some alternative energy investment in your home or some sort of more unique investment strategy in natural gas or investment tax credits for drilling. There's some really unique strategies that might allow you to invest your money and get a better tax, preferential tax return or treatment, but it's going to be tough. So for everybody out there, and Sergeant, I say this for you, this is where the small business strategy is really going to just play out, and we're going to have to do our best with that. And I'm sorry, it's a tough question. And please get the workshop and recording and watch that six-hour video when you can. And I go through every strategy I know of to help you as a W-2 wage earner to save taxes. Okay, we got a question from Aaron. It says, hi, Mark. I'm a real estate investor and have recently changed my model to mostly private lending. My proceeds for these loans are, of course, our interest, but often there is shared profit at the end. I have an S-Corp and a single-member LLC, both of which flow through to my personal tax return. These are put together by your office. Are all the proceeds considered interest if there is profit sharing? The answer is no. They are not considered all interest if there is profit sharing. And she says, also depending on that answer, what entities should I use to get the best tax advantages? Well, Aaron, whenever you have, and this is important for everybody listening, whenever you're doing a real estate deal where you have part interest and then you're also getting a part of the project on the back end, you're going to want to channel that active income typically through an S corporation, because if these are fix and flips and rehabs and you're getting a share of the back end, that's not all interest. You're getting interest for the use of your money, and then someone was generous enough to give you a share of the profit on the project on the other side of the deal, which they don't have to do, but you were lucky enough to get it. That's great. But that's going to be taxed very differently. So depending on how many deals you've got, what type of real estate deal or investment it was, you're going to end up with a 1099 for that share of the income. And I tell my clients that. If you've got some hard money lender, you're going to give them a 1099 for interest, and if they get a share of the profit, you're going to give them a 1099 miscellaneous for ordinary income. So be careful out there, folks. Big deal. Now, if you've just joined us, we've got a lot of people joining us here on the air that are with us today for our year-end tax planning open forum. I'm going to give a list here midway through the show of some good year-end tax tips that I think all of you should be thinking about. But I'm also fielding questions throughout the show of those of you that emailed them in advance. And if any of you have a live question, please call in and press the number 1, and Justin will bring you out on the line. And the call-in number is 646-200-4285. All right, so I'm going to jump over to another question here. This is from Doug. And Doug, this brings up the video that I mentioned just a moment ago. He said, Mark, is the truck deduction for $25,000 only for small business, i.e., corporation has to buy a truck, or can owner of the business buy truck personally and get a deduction write-off and then rent the truck to their business? Can I buy and avoid the truck being a corporate asset? Is it exclusive for new trucks, or can I purchase a used truck somewhere like CarMax? Okay, so this is, Doug, this is a really good question. And I alluded to this at the beginning of the show. Come the end of the year, the write-off for buying a truck or SUV is going to be severely limited. It's only going to be $25,000 for all your equipment and purchases, including your vehicles, unless Congress extends it. So that, watch that video on the newsletter regarding the tax write-off for small businesses. It's over on the right-hand side of the newsletter. But to answer Doug's question for all of you out there, I don't care, and the IRS doesn't care, believe it or not. They don't care if you own the truck or your corporation owns it. They don't care if you own your car or your LLC owns your car. When it comes to the auto deduction, ownership is irrelevant on title. I don't care if you own it or your company owns it. We're going to make it a business asset on the books if we need to, if we're going to depreciate it, or we may take mileage. So, Doug, the first thing I would say is, whether you have a corporation or not, don't stress about it. And if you do have a corporation, you're never going to rent your truck back to yourself, because then you create rental income. We don't want to do that. Let's just contribute the truck to the business and put it on the books. But, folks, remember, 90% of my clients do mileage. The mileage deduction is amazing, and I just put that on the newsletter today. We've got 56.5 cents per mile, and it's good stuff. So there's a lot of good write-offs out there. Okay, now he's also said, can you buy new trucks or used trucks and get the same write-off? Yes, you can write off both the used truck and the new truck, and you're going to get both. So whether it's new or used, you get the same write-off. So don't stress about that. So folks out there, if you're buying a car right before the end of the year or a truck, it can be used to you, and you're fine. Okay, we had a question from Debbie. She says, Mark, what do I need to deduct the cost of Renatus on my taxes? Now, folks, for those of you that don't know Renatus, it's like a real estate education program. They do a fantastic job. I'm a speaker for Renatus, and I love what they do. It's online real estate info. Well, folks, if you're paying for real estate education, you're going to want to write it off. I want you to write it off. And so make sure that you are talking with your CPA advisor and that you're finding out which strategy is the best for you for that. Now, some of you out there, when you invest in real estate education and you're just getting started, taking it as a startup cost and spreading it over time is sometimes the best way to go. And that's fine. Don't feel like you have to, write it off all at once. Sometimes when you write off that real estate education all at once, it can be a red flag with the IRS. So what I want to tell everybody, and especially Debbie here, is your real estate education, your small business education, whatever you're doing, is a write-off. The question is, what do we do? Do we take it off over time? Do we write it off all at once? And so you want to make sure that you are choosing the method based on your income level that keeps it not as a red flag with the IRS. I guess there's no easy way to say that. But be cautious and don't get too aggressive. And I'll just say this again. If you don't have a lot of income yet in your small business, I'm going to push that education expense off to the next year rather than try to do it all right now. So keep that in mind. And Debbie, it's really about just coordinating with your real estate tax advisor to make sure that we get a write-off for that. Lisa asked a question. She says, Mark, am I required to issue W-2s or 1099s when paying my kids? This is one of those year-end strategies that is in my newsletter. I'll mention that in my kind of list here in a moment. But for those of you that have older children, younger children, or parents, or helping any family member financially, it's important this time of year you decide how you're going to pay them. I was just in the conference room 20 minutes ago with a client explaining how to pay their kids, transferring money from their business into the family management company and then out to their kids. Everybody's situation is a little different. In fact, with this client, we didn't even need a family management company. But here's the point. You do not have to issue your children under age 18 a W-2 or 1099. Nothing. You're just going to classify it as outside labor, and you can give it different terms. And so don't feel like you have to issue a 1099 or a W-2, or that they even need to file a tax return. So think about that. Now, for those of you that have kids or family members, brothers, sisters that are over age 18, you will need to probably at the least give them a 1099 because they would be considered a contractor. But putting them on as an employee requires a lot of bit of FICA taxes and all the different pseudofuda FICA and workers' comp. They can really add up. So, and I'm sorry for stuttering there, folks, a little bit. We've got a lot of activity here in the studio, and I apologize. I got distracted with a couple of questions that just came in, too. But bottom line, for any of you that have children under age 18, don't worry about a 1099 or W-2. For those of you with kids over age 18, you're going to want to issue a 1099 and stay away from the W-2. Now, I've recorded videos on this in the online video series, and it's in the workshop. So, Lisa, if you need some more content on that, there's plenty of videos that can help give you more detail. Okay, so now let's jump over here. Another question, and thanks, everybody, for these wonderful emails that are coming in here. This is great. So this is a big question from Chris, and I mentioned to him we'll do our best to answer this. He said, Mark, I've converted a self-directed IRA, not a Roth, from cash to physical gold and silver in 2008. Right now, the value is down quite a bit from the highs in 2011. So I'd like to pull it out of an IRA, take the penalties and early distributions. First one is that I'd like to get off the government's radar, and if there comes a time when holding precious metals is considered illegal, as Roosevelt did, and it could happen again, then I'd like to have that those precious metals in my own name, not my IRA. He also thinks they could make a significant run in the upcoming years. He said, what's the tax implications of pulling precious metals from a non-Roth IRA early? So here's the point for everybody. If you've got any sort of asset in an IRA, whether it's precious metals or not, and you take a distribution, when you take that distribution, then you will have to pay a 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half, and you're going to have to pay taxes. So for any of you out there, be careful taking money out of an IRA. And if you think the value is going to go up in the future, convert it to a Roth if you want to pay the taxes, no penalty, and then any future growth is going to be tax-free inside the Roth IRA. So I am a little concerned about paying the penalty just to get money out. And I know, Chris, you've got some grave concerns about the government and precious metals. We can sense that in your email. But I'd be cautious of paying the penalty and the taxes because it can really add up. You might want to just convert it to a Roth. But to each is their own, so just be cautious. All right, now I want to take a quick minute here. It's at the bottom of the hour. Whew. And this is, you can see, this is a stressful opportunity. You guys don't even know, this is one of the stressful, most stressful shows for me every month, and it, certainly this time of year, is, there's a lot of questions and a lot of tax and legal planning here at the last minute. So I want to kind of list through a few of the top 10 strategies, and for those out there, okay, let's just take a breath, and some of you might want to just pull out a post-it and make a few notes of some of the things you might need to worry about. Now, I know this doesn't affect everybody, so I'm just going to rattle off. I might list off 10 or 15 things here. Your juice is flowing, but man, this is powerful to me. Okay, so number one, and some of this is in my blog. I'm going to go through the blog and some other items. Number one, make an S election on your LLC. If you've used an LLC this year for operations, you may need to make an S election retroactively and claim some payroll, or you're going to pay way too much in self-employment tax. I've done two of those in the last 24 hours. Next, make sure your payroll amount, if you have an S corporation, is accurate. You've got to do it in the next 3 weeks or so. By January 15th, it's got to be done, finished, and filed. Now, Cynthia in my office, Cynthia Morales, can help you with that. Call up and talk to Cynthia. Just call the main number for the law or accounting firm and ask for Cynthia Morales. She can help set your payroll amount. It should be about a third of your overall income, or it could be a little less of your overall income. It could be a little higher. I did a payroll matrix in my workshop. If any of you have not watched the workshop yet, again, like I said, I do go through a whole section with a payroll matrix diagram. Check it out. Number three, put your kids or grandkids on payroll. We already talked about that. Make sure you funnel the money to the kids before year end. You can't say I paid my kids or grandkids. You've got to do it. Now, again, like I mentioned earlier, it does not require a 1099 or W-2 if it's your own kids under age 18. There may be some other issues if you're paying grandkids or kids over age 18. So study up on it. Number four, put your spouse on payroll. Let me repeat that. Some of you that are married, putting your spouse on payroll can be a very important strategy, and it can be very, very helpful. Next, implement a 401k before year end. Now, I cannot emphasize this enough. For those of you that want to put money into an IRA or 401k or a SEP or something like that, the 401k is your most efficient vehicle. And it has to be established before December 31st. If some of you are up against the wall and you don't know who to call or where to set it up, send us an email. We'll send you some references. We don't set up your 401k here. But if some of you only want to put away $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000, just do an IRA. But for those of you that want to put away $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 and you do have that small business, the 401k is much more effective. Next, establish your entity before year end. I've had multiple emails and phone calls over the last 10 days getting people set up for the new year. This is a wonderful time to get organized, get the proper LLC for your rental properties, or get your S-Corp set up, or make your S-Election. All of these things are most efficient to be done this time of year. Number seven, close on that rental property if it's in the balance. I've had many clients that are trying to finish up a rental property transaction before year end so they can get the write-off this year for depreciation and some other expenses for travel or who knows what to go check on that rental that they were going to buy. So if you're in the process of getting that rental property, let's close the deal. For those of you that haven't done that, be looking forward to get that rental property in place. Next, number eight, purchase the best vehicle for you. This is something I alluded to a little earlier. Some of you might be buying an SUV or a truck before year end. The write-off is huge right now. It's going to be severely limited by the end of the year. So those that are in the market, those that might want to purchase an electric vehicle, there are still some incredible tax benefits and tax credits, federal and state, depending on where you're at, for an electric vehicle. So put that on your list, folks, for those that are in the market for a new car. It may be an SUV, truck, or electric. There are no more deductions for an hybrid. It's only for plug-in electrics or a combination thereof. Next, push some income or expenses into the proper year. Some of you want to take some expenses now. Some of you want to push some income to next year. Some of you may want to push some income to this year and then push the expenses to next year. Evaluate that. Take a few minutes to think of what may be the best strategy. Next, make a Roth conversion. I alluded to this a moment ago. Folks, if you've got an IRA, you may want to convert it to a Roth. Guess what? You have to have the paperwork in by December 31st. But here's the cool part. If you change your mind, you can undo the Roth conversion by April 15th. Sorry, I don't know why I said March. You can undo the conversion by April 15th. So folks, it's a great get out of jail free card. If you don't want to do it, you can forget about the Roth conversion by just filing a separate sheet of paper by April 15th. But if you're thinking about maybe paying the taxes and doing a conversion, you have to do it before year end. Some of the other strategies. For those of you that tithe and give money to charity, give to charity outside of inside your IRA. There's no penalty, there's no tax, and some of you might even want to put money in your IRA, take a tax deduction because it's on the front page of your tax return, and then give to charity. It might actually be better for you on your tax return based on your income or strategy. But the point is, if you are giving money to charity in the next 2 weeks, maybe you should do it out of your IRA. Many of you have heard of the donate your car before year end. If you have some of you have a car laying around on blocks and you want to donate that, that could be a good strategy before year end as well. Okay, we're going to see where our questions go at this point, and we'll see. I've got a question here from Neil. I want to see what he's thrown out here. Neil, let's see if you're out on the line. I'm going to just bring you on, Neil. And let's take your question live on starting a new entity. Neil, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for your patience here in the studio. It's a little crazy today and lots of questions coming in. What do you got? You're thinking of starting a new company before year end?
I am thinking of starting a new company, but I'm not sure if I need to do it this year, even though I've purchased the property this year, because I don't feel as a I'm not sure what the benefit would be in the short term and starting it in January, because I have to transfer the property to the LLC anyway.
Okay. Well, so we're talking about an LLC formation and a rental property.
Correct.
And what state, may I ask?
Tennessee.
Okay, Tennessee. Well, and thank you, because every state's a little different. You're not going to save any taxes, and it's not going to cost you any taxes to set it up in December versus January. So it's really a tax-neutral decision. And for most everybody listening, when you have a rental property, the best thing is to get that LLC in place as soon as you're able. And in some states, we want to push it till the end of the year, like California. Neil, if it was California, I would say definitely we want to start it in January, because we don't want to pay taxes in 2013 at the state level. We want to wait till 2014. But really, it's just getting the LLC in place, getting a new bank account going, and getting it set up in Tennessee, and get it rolling. And there's really no issue whether you do it in the last 2 weeks of December or the first 2 weeks of January. Does that help?
That does help. I have a second one, but you can go to someone else if you want.
No, go ahead. We'll take it real quick. Go ahead and shoot.
Okay. This is about actually joining an existing LLC partnership in a different non-real estate project. Kind of the small business way. And same question. If I join this year, I'm basically going to be involved. All the repercussions of the taxes are going to, for what they've done before I joined, will that be impacted? Or would be better just to start fresh January 1st?
When you'd go into a partnership, and again, this is great for everybody listening, if you're going to buy into a partnership, you're able to define when you are liable for the income or able to take the expenses, vice versa, and what that cutoff date really is in the partnership transition. So if you were coming into a partnership with me, you would say, Mark, I'm going to buy in, and let's make it effective January 1st. Therefore, for all of 2013, you have no liability and no interest in that income or expenses. You wouldn't be a player in the LLC until January 1st. Now, that's something we would document in the partnership acquisition or in the membership transfer agreement, partnership transfer agreement, something like that. So you are not liable for prior taxes. You're not able to take those benefits either of the expenses. You would just start fresh on a particular date.
Okay. Okay, I think starting fresh sounds better for me because I don't have as much foresight into, well, I guess hindsight into what happened the first half of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you want to analyze that and see what fits you best in your situation on whether or not you take those write-offs as part of the new acquisition or you just have a certain cutoff date, which is typical. That's the way you would do it. And so right now I'm actually working on a partnership transition document today where it's effective January 1st, and that's the typical way to do it. So.
Great, thank you.
Neil, great questions. Thanks so much.
Yep, see you in January.
All right, thanks, Neil. All right, well, we've got another caller on the line. This is Marcy and John, and I have a feeling this is about HSAs, and we can field that as well. So, Marcy, John, are you there?
Yes, we're here. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Mark.
Good. thanks, guys. I thought you were on a flight going coast to coast, but you were able to make the show live, huh?
We are. We actually just got in from the airport and jumped on the call, so we weren't sure if you answered the call already or not. I mean, the question.
No problem. Now, I think if I saw your email, because you were wondering if you'd make the show, is Obamacare affecting HSAs? Is that the topic?
That was one of John's questions, yes.
Okay, all right. If there's another one, we'll take it here in 2 seconds. So, folks, this is an important question. With Obamacare, the health savings account is still alive and well. And even as our firm is adopting a new insurance policy effective January 1st, we're debating going to an HSA plan or back to a PPO plan. And our company, our employees maybe sometimes get sick of it, but we're jumping between PPOs and HSAs every other year, depending on what we can get the best deal for. So if your employer where you work allows for a health savings account, you're able to make contributions this year of close to $6,200, $6,300 in a family, $3,100, $3,200 single, and some of you may be setting up an individual plan as well. So be thinking about that, and the HSA is alive and well. And Marcy, did you say you had a second question?
Yes, actually I have several, but I'll make it quick. If someone is sharing in household expenses, but they're going to give us a lump sum check instead of a monthly, what's the best way to take that check in to minimize taxes?
Well, if you're sharing household expenses with someone that may be paying rent in your own home?
Yeah. Somebody's staying with me temporarily, so that's why I was asking that question. But
gotcha.
They're going to give me a lump sum for 6 months, so I didn't want to just take it because not my rental is my primary, so I want to see what's the best way to do that.
Well, and I've got to be careful with this answer because it is being recorded and there may be an IRS agent listening in. So, no, I'm just joking. I would say this to everybody. This is really common when people say, well, Mark, I'm renting a room in my home or I have a mother-in-law apartment or a basement and I'm just collecting some rent that may just be temporary. In that type of situation, I don't think I want to start renting, how could I say, start treating the home as a rental and depreciating it. If it's going to be temporary and they're just helping out with household expenses, I hate to say this word on the air, but that would be maybe kind of an under the table type of transaction. And in my experience with IRS agents in the past, if it's de minimis and it's not a lot of money, they're really not going to care about it either. It's more work than it's worth. But for some of you out there that have a standalone basement, I mean, or, you know, this rental property that's a part of your home that's permanently going to be that type of structure, mother-in-law apartment, upstairs, downstairs, and it's really going to be a long-term commitment, then I think you need to substantiate it and treat it as a rental property, as a portion of your home, kind of like a duplex. But if it's just temporary, I wouldn't worry about it, Marcy.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to cut you off and say if it's okay, shoot me an email on the next question. I've got a lot of questions in the pipe here, and I want to be
absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy, and hey, John, and thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you guys. I love you. Send me an email on that last one.
All right, sounds good. Thanks. Bye.
All right, thank you. Well, let me take another email question here before I jump over to our couple callers, and I love it when I have live callers. Thanks, everybody, for your patience if I don't hit all your questions. Just want to get to as many as I can. We've got Mimi. She says, Mark, I have a California C-Corp entity for about 3 years with no activity. I've been paying, and she doesn't swear, but I'll swear for her. She goes, I've been paying that darn Is Darn really swearing? She says, I've been paying that darn $800 annual franchise fee every year and filing a zero return. She says, can I suspend the C-Corp status or should I just close the entity and what does that entail? What would be the best time to do close it and what do you recommend? So, Mimi, here's the deal. If you've been paying for this corporation $800 a year and you don't have a foreseeable business revenue stream coming in the next few months or next year, just close down the stupid company. It's costing you way too much. You could always open a new company in the future if necessary. The that setup would be more affordable than paying every year for something you're not using. Now, if you're going to dissolve it, you can't suspend it. You just have to dissolve it. And right now is the time to do it in the next 2 weeks. So, Mimi, call my paralegal, Susan Cumpy, and say, Susan, dissolve the C-Corp effective 12/31. That way you don't pay any taxes in 2014. Very important. So think about that, and I think it will it's very important that you try to dissolve it before year-end. It's critical if you're going to try to do it. I've got a question from Thomas here. He says, is it better to do payroll deductions to my HSA or do an after-tax contribution to an HSA? Have a safe and happy holiday time to all the listeners and you and your staff at KKOS. Thomas, thanks so much. Happy holidays to you too. Guys, if you're going to contribute to an HSA, I don't care if it's a payroll deduction or it's a contribution out of your own pocket. You use the word after-tax contribution, Thomas, but I think what you're saying is after you receive your payroll contribution. The bottom line is, whether it's deducted from your payroll or you contribute to your HSA after the fact, it's all going to be a tax deduction on the front page of your personal return. So there's not a better place to do it. Just make sure you max it out if you're able to. And I hope that makes sense, but everybody try to make that contribution. I'm going to jump over to Jimmy, who's a live caller. Jimmy, are you there on the line? I can't hear you. You might want to unmute your phone, which you very well could have done. So, Jimmy, are you there? Okay. I didn't catch that. I think his question was about prior taxes, and he hasn't filed yet, and he wants to maximize his write-offs. So, Jimmy, we probably need to talk. A pretty in-depth question there. So let's get your old tax returns filed, and let's maximize all the write-offs we can in that process. I'm going to go to an email question, then I'll come over to John on the line. But first, from Katie and Christian, they said, Mark, do you have knowledge about L3Cs? Do businesses in Illinois use this type of company? When is it beneficial to use an L3C? I don't know what an L3C is. You might be talking about a triple LP. It's like called a limited liability, limited partnership, and we use those all the time, typically for our Canadian clients, to be honest. The triple LP, limited liability, limited partnership, is a great structure for partnerships or holding real estate. They're kind of new. I've written about these in a blog article in the last 2 or 3 weeks, so check out my blog at markjkohler.com. But if it's not the triple LP, Katie, I'm not sure what a L3C is. And since you have the letter L and the number 3 in it, I have a suspicion you're talking about the triple LP, but I hope that helps. Okay, well, I'm going to go to another live caller. I've got John on the line. John, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir. What's going on?
Well, I have a single member limited liability company, and it's been making good money, and after I heard you, I realize I need a management company, which makes it multi-member, and so I'm implementing everything you tell me. What I need to know is, do I still have to file 11 months of Schedule C when I've added the extra member, or do I put it all onto a 1065 for the whole year?
Well, John, that's a great question, and it's fairly complicated. I'm going to do my best to answer it here, and I think this would help a lot of the listeners to hear this response. So this is a great question. But I have a suspicion I need to have you talk to one of our other attorneys in the office just to make sure we're good, or one of the CPAs. So here's the deal. If you had an LLC all year long and you're generating more income than you expected, first of all, congratulations. God bless you. We first might want to do an S election. That's one consideration. But if you're going to add a management company as a part member of that LLC, if you add that member before year end, we would do kind of a part year situation. You might be a Schedule C for the first 9 months of the year and then file a 1065 as a partnership return before the end of the year. John, I'm going to say this. If you're going to be adding a new member to the LLC and it didn't happen 9 to 12 months ago, I would probably make it effective January 1st, 2014. So kind of file as a single member LLC for the year and then make the new member effective January 1st. But then if you've got this income that's looming out there, you might want to make an S election anyway. So in a consultation, we would determine what type of income you're generating, how much income, when do we want to add this partner, and would it be most effective to try to do some sort of retroactive addition. But does that help? Is there a follow-up question that might allow me to make
sure.
More?
Really what I was looking for, because, I mean, actually I did real well, and it's going to be such a high, you know, income, high audit possibility on the Schedule C, so I was trying to get it onto a 1065, and yes, I'll be doing some of the things in the management company for year end, so I will be able to move some of the income from into the management company and take it there. So I'm really trying to see, I'm trying to figure out how to get it onto a 1065 if I can.
Are you married by any chance?
Yes.
Okay, if you're married, we might want to retroactively make your spouse a partner for the year, and that could push it over to a 1065, and then we could always add the management company later, effective January 1st. So it sounds like there's some options. So the important thing here that I think everybody listening, and some of you may say, well, this is irrelevant, I don't need to hear this, but here's the point. We can be creative. There's some options here. Maybe we retroactively add your spouse as a partner. Maybe we add a new entity. Maybe we do an S election. I want to know how much money you've made. And this is a perfect time of year in the next couple weeks to figure this out. So, John, I hate to say it, but you've got a complicated enough thing where I'd say call the office and see if you could schedule 30 minutes with me or one of the other attorneys or CPAs in the next 2 weeks, and let's figure out the game plan.
I'll definitely do that, sir. Besides, I've gotten so much value just from the show today. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, John, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, don't hang up. We've still got, 10 minutes left here. All right, John, thank you so much. Sorry, I think I hit the button and cut you off there if you were going to say something more. Okay, we got another question from Pansy via email. I'm having so much fun, everybody. I'm sorry, it seems like I'm talking so fast. This is just so challenging to get through so many emails, and it's such an honor. If I don't get to everyone's email, it doesn't look like I will. Please know I'll try to respond via email if it's a quick yes or no. If not, some of you doing a little consultation before year end for 15 minutes even could be very helpful. Okay, this is from Pansy. Pansy, it's always great to have you ask a question. You've been such a long-time listener. She gives quite a bit of detail and then hits the general question at the end. So here it is, and this is good for everybody. She says, Mark, what would be necessary to provide my custodian if I wanted to prove that the investments in my Roth IRA or 401k are dead? And the point being here, some of you may have done an investment in an IRA or 401k years ago, and when the market crashed, the real estate inside that IRA has now gone through a short sale or a foreclosure, and the LLC is pretty much diluted of any assets. In that situation, she's asking, what should I do, and what do I need to provide my custodian so I can just get rid of this IRA and any fees and show that the IRA is dead? Well, typically in this situation, we have to provide some sort of attorney or CPA letter with maybe even an appraisal, if necessary, to show that the ownership, that the IRA has no value. Now, this could be done with some tax returns and a letter from the CPA, and it could help the custodian pad their file enough to close the account. So it's really that clear. And for some of you that have self-directed IRAs or 401ks and your Roths and you're trying to figure out what to do, if you haven't participated in this, I'm just going to throw it out there. Tomorrow night is our Strategic Wealth Alliance webinar where I do a one-hour coaching session with my computer screen and webcam, and it's only $19.20 or something, $19.99 or whatever, $20 a month. Tomorrow night, I'm talking about exclusively self-directed IRAs and LLCs, and Matt Sorensen is coming on the webinar, and he'll be sharing his screen, and we're going to be going through a bunch of diagrams, and he'll be talking about his new book that comes out January 1st. So if any of you would like to sign up for that webinar, just go to the website markjkohler.com and sign up for the Strategic Wealth Alliance webinar series. You'll get an email and registration, and that's for tomorrow night, 6 to 7 o'clock Pacific. So if you'd like to you get involved in that. Okay, now another question from Sean. It says, Mark, love your show. For the past 2 years, I've had my youngest daughter on payroll. This past March, she turned 18. Can I still pay her for services rendered this year up until her 18th birthday without deducting payroll taxes? Well, technically, Sean, what you should have done is paid her physically, transferred her money before her 18th birthday, and we would have just called it outside labor. Then anything you paid her since March would go on a 1099. Now, bottom line, you're not going to have to deduct any payroll taxes. Just give her a 1099. But frankly, what I would probably do is look at how much you paid her before March and just call that outside labor, and anything you paid her since March, I would call a 1099. That's the technical answer. So let's run the numbers and see where we get on that. He said, also, I recently purchased QuickBooks and need help setting it up to track my real estate business in 2014. Can someone in your firm help? And who is it? It's Sandy Beecham and her team in the accounting services. And folks, if you haven't used Sandy, she's amazing with her team, helping people with their QuickBooks and accounting. And also January 1st, I hope to launch my QuickBooks training video series that I've been working on for a year. And it's pretty fun. So keep your eyes open for that, Sean, and that could be a good help. All right, now in our last 2 minutes, I'm going to try to hit a question from Steve, and Steve had 4 questions in his email. I think I already told him in an email. I said, Steve, I can't do all of it, but I'll do my best. He said, Steve, for the radio show tomorrow, here's a topic I'm interested in, and I think other listeners would benefit as well. Number one, is it true that the IRS Department of Labor allows an individual to have more than one 401k plan, even though the aggregate contribution limit remains the same? And yes, it is true. You can participate in multiple 401ks. Number two, he said, if so, would it make sense from a liability protection standpoint to maintain a separate solo 401k for each piece of property being held? I think that's overkill. You get asset protection with any 401k, and what you would do, Steve, instead is have multiple LLCs owned by your 401k. So you, if you have one 401k with multiple real estate projects, you'd probably have separate LLCs for each project, but they're all owned by the same 401k. So keep that in mind. I'm going to see if I can just do one more quick question here. And Steve, I know I didn't get to all yours, but we'll follow up via email. It says, this is from Robin. She says, Mark, where can I buy a Roth IRA that gives me a good yield? Can an IRA purchase mutual funds, or does it have to be self-directed to do so? Robin, I really wanted to take this question for everybody in the last. Let me just say, remember, a Roth IRA doesn't give you a good yield. The Roth IRA is the vehicle. What you put in the vehicle is what gives you the yield. And it doesn't have to be self-directed to do mutual funds. It can be self-directed. It can't be self-directed. It's up to you. But the Roth IRA itself is the vehicle, and then you can find investment advisors to help you put different things in that IRA that give you the best investment. So keep that in mind, and that could help as well. Folks, I hope this wasn't too much of a whirlwind for you. Please let me make a couple points. Read the blog article from 2 weeks ago with 10 year-end tips. Check out the newsletter today. If you've joined the Strategic Wealth Alliance, I have a webinar on the year-end strategy plus tomorrow night on self-directed IRA. I had so much fun. I hope you did. Enjoy your Christmas, everybody, and please continue continue to listen to the show. I'll be here on Tuesday morning, December 31st, talking about New Year's resolutions.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.